I'm SP from Better Podcasting, a show dedicated to help make your podcast better. And it is part of the Get a Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other insightful and wonderful geeky shows at GettaGeekNetwork.com.
Your blood comes from dukes and great houses. We don't have that here. Here, we're equal. Men and women alike. What we do for the benefit of all.
Well, I'd very much like to be equal to you.
Oh, Muad'Dib, Uzzal. Maybe you could be Fremen. Maybe I'll show you the way.
And welcome to Smoking and Drinking in Space. This is a sci-fi podcast from a couple guys who think they know sci-fi. And this week we head back to Arrakis to check in on our favorite blue-eyed religious figure starring Timothy Chalamet, Rebecca Ferguson, and Zendaya. It's 2024's Dune Part 2. But first, he's the unborn fetus who thinks he knows everything just because he drinks some raspberry Kool-Aid. It's Rob. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm doing excellent.
Yeah.
By the way, you're going to die in 5 years. I have foreseen it.
No, it's not necessarily true.
No, it is. I have superpowers now.
So how have you been these past many months since we recorded last?
Well, I mean, I've been great. We've recorded a few times. This is kind of weird being on this side of the mic, though. In that I did three things to get ready for this show, which doesn't happen very often.
I don't believe you. I don't believe that you did anything to get ready for this show.
Well, I did, dude. I had to brush off my haiku making ways. I've got one ready to go. I had to do the weirdest thing, and I had to take a massive dump so that I could get enough news for today. I haven't done that in a while.
You haven't taken a dump in a while?
Not a massive one, no. Because that's how I get all the good news, is while I'm sitting on the pot. We have established this. I have been backed up for months because of you.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
What was the third thing? It's all good.
I came up with awards. I mean, I have to do that all the time, but I came up with some awards. And I didn't have to do a pod crawl for that.
Yeah,
I did a pod crawl for something else, but I didn't do it for this.
Yeah, that took a little bit of getting used to is writing a pod crawl after so long. Yeah, yeah. I'm out of the habit.
And it's not only did you have to write a pod crawl after so long, you had to write a pod crawl that you couldn't take notes while you watched.
Right. So I'm having to go off of everything. Fortunately, I just seen the movie like an hour before. So
it's nice and fresh.
Yeah. So it's nice and fresh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you mentioned that you got some news thanks to a massive bowel movement. So why don't you throw some news our way?
All right. So my first news article is, do you know what this sound is?
No, it sounded like you deflated yourself.
Close. That's the sound of air escaping the International Space Station.
Okay. What happened to the International Space Station?
Yeah. So apparently the Russia Space Agency has confirmed that air is continuing to leak from the one of the Russian segments up there on the ISS. They're monitoring the situation and waiting to see when it becomes an issue. Because apparently leaking air into space that is holding people it's an issue. It's just not a pressing concern.
I don't know. I think leaking air would be a pressing concern to me.
Anything.
Just, yeah.
anything leaking in space is a pressing concern. I mean, we've proven that with Apollo 13, when the oxygen tanks, again, air, were leaking and, blew up.
Yeah, that seems like they should probably figure that out quicker.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that SP was in here but didn't want to stick around for the news. We could have gotten some insight on this this space-related article.
Oh, you think he knows where the leak is?
I thought maybe he might know, you know, a little bit more. Like, I don't know, how do they plan on fixing the leak? Or how does one fix a leak in space?
Duct tape.
Duct tape.
Yeah.
And chewing gum?
No, just duct tape.
Okay. Yeah, because chewing gum would be a little weird because you'd have to like chew it and then open and close your helmet really fast while you're on your spacewalk to stick it on the outside of the
right, ship. And then it's going to blow a big bubble.
Yeah. Well, you can't put it on the inside because it'll just get sucked out into space, right? Like Alien.
Right.
Or I'm sorry, Alien Resurrection is when the alien... human alien hybrid thingy got sucked.
So how much air is actually escaping?
Apparently it is small, that it's not too big of an issue right this second, but it is getting larger. So at some near future, they are going to go try to figure out where it's at, which is kind of interesting, because apparently, Russia is pulling out of the ISS after 2024.
I wonder why.
Yeah, it says the nation has vowed to pull out of the ISS sometime after 2024.
You think they're pulling out, or were they just asked not to come back?
I don't know.
We don't want you here. Your shit leaks.
But that's the thing is you know they're wanting to pull out. So it's kind of like. Like, you know, when you know you're about to sell the house or you have an offer on the house and something breaks and you're just kind of like, that's somebody else's problem.
Right.
Right. So, you know, that's kind of where they're at now.
Paint over it.
Yeah. You just, that water spot. Yeah. We'll put a little bit of Kills on it. We'll touch it up. You'll never see it until it like actually becomes an issue.
Until it bursts.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, because NASA's going to be in that house at least until 2030, apparently. That's their timeline right now. It might be sooner than that, though, if this leak has anything to do with it. Or, you know, once the Russians leave, just jettison that module. Close the hatch, jettison it. You don't need it.
Just tear down that built-on addition.
Yeah, why not?
All right, what else you got?
So are you familiar with a movie called Dune Part 2?
Let's see, Dune Part 2. No.
Not to be confused with Doom 2.
Doom 2.
No, Dune 2.
Doom Part 2.
No, Dune, D-U-N-E.
D-O-O-M, got it.
Like deja vu for the third time.
I mean, yes, I've heard of this movie called Dune Part 2.
Well, that's amazing because this article has something to do with Dune Part 2.
No kidding.
Yeah, I thought it'd be kind of interesting.
I mean, this is a fairly obscure movie. I'm surprised they're writing articles about it.
They are, and it's kind of interesting. Are you familiar with the scenes that revolved around the Harkonnen homeworld?
Yeah.
And how it was in black and white?
Well,
grayscale.
Yeah. Very, very high contrast black and white, yeah.
Yes. Well, that is because they filmed that using special infrared cameras to capture non-visual wavelengths, light, and then converted it to grayscale.
And that's one of the things that I kind of want to discuss, and kind of one of the theories that I had. Thanks for confirming that.
You're welcome. Here,
we'll kind of talk about theories. We'll kind of talk about that here in a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah. So the director, Denis
Villeneuve.
Villeneuve, there we go, Denis Villeneuve, you know, there's not much that's said about the home world in the Dune novels, and so he kind of took it upon himself to go with that aesthetic, and he thought it would be interesting to do the IR cameras to give it kind of a eerie, milky look to the skin and all that kind of good stuff. So I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, it's a very, very interesting look. And yeah, and we'll definitely be talking about that here shortly.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right. What else you got?
All right. So the last one that I have here, we're going to talk a little bit more about NASA. This is not, you know, about the space station and the fact that it's
leaking air.
Yeah. This is about the helicopter on Mars.
Oh, yeah. One that's no longer broke a rotor.
Yeah, so the helicopter broke a rotor back around January 18th. And so it had to land, and it's not able to take off anymore. But that's okay. The helicopter is still doing a very important job.
Sitting there?
Watching dirt move. Yeah.
Slightly more interesting than watching paint dry.
Right. So the helicopter did significantly better than they had ever hoped. It ended up doing, 72 different flights total, which was impressive because I think they were hoping for like half a dozen or something.
Something like that, yeah.
I think they were hoping for like one, and then like, okay, let's do six, you know, but so it did like 72 different flights, but eventually, you know, the Martian planet is a cruel, cruel mistress and had other plans for the rotors. So it's just sitting on the ground. But all of its stuff is still working right now because, or at least until the solar panels finally get covered in Martian dust. So what it's doing is it's using its little camera that points down. And it is watching the dirt move on the ground, so that people can learn about the geological process that is on Mars. And as this is a quote from NASA, the team continues to run vehicle health checks while snapping images of the Martian surface. Though we mostly see the sand below us with the color camera, Martian scientists can learn about geological processes by having a series of images taken from one spot to see how dust, sand, and rock particles move in response to Martian weather and wind. So they're basically learning a little bit about climate patterns and that kind of stuff, I guess. And
riveting science.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some
dirt move.
There's some geologist out there that just popped a boner for this. So, you know, more power to him. But I thought that was kind of interesting in terms of like, okay, they've figured out something to use this for, and it, you know, it's still serving some sort of purpose.
Yeah. I mean, it's good that it's still transmitting data, and they found something else to do for it.
Yeah. At least until the sand covers the panels.
They ever say what broke the rotor?
It doesn't say in this article what caused the rotor to break.
ASP, what broke the rotor? We'll find out in the next episode.
Okay. Or at this point, he posts in the SatX channel.
Right.
This is what broke the rotor. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No. Look, you only give me three. I'm only giving you three.
I remember distinctly giving you four not too long ago.
Look, it has been a long time since you have been doing a podcast as the host.
Kind of a special occasion. Maybe you would go above and beyond.
No, I didn't think you deserved that kind of special attention.
Well, I probably don't.
Maybe on the next one. Who knows? You know, maybe this will just like restart your creative juices and this will have
inspire
another,
you.
No, no, it'll inspire, you to have more episodes.
I think I will have another episode here shortly.
Okay, fine. Maybe one, two more possibly.
Yeah, one, maybe two more. Let's say we'll have another episode towards the end of March.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
All right. You ready for a pod crawl?
I can hardly wait to see what you pop out.
Let's do this.
We can call it, I don't know, say a pod crawl. The pod crawl. Pod crawl. Pod crawl. Pod crawl. Excellent. Insert it deep. Pod crawl. Kind of like a space suppository full of information.
We are back on Arrakis, enjoying the beating sun and dry desert air with Willy Wonka and Mary Jane, who are planning a reverse ambush of a Harkonnen hunter group. Using the recently dead body of Jamie's, they hide while the hunter party goes to high ground and gets picked off like fish on a plateau. Job done, and they head home to convince the Freeman that Paul is indeed their prophesized savior, even though he doesn't believe that himself. Nor does his girlfriend. But Stilgar sure does, and says that it's proof that Paul is the prophet because he's way too humble to think he's the prophet. However, Willy knows that in order to become the chocolate baron of Oompa Loompa Land, he's going to need the help of the Freeman. So he and his Preggers mom start a campaign to get on the good side of the Freeman. Mama Atreides is called on to replace the Freeman's Reverend Mother, but to do so she has to drink the Kool-Aid. However, she is Preggers, and so the Kool-Aid transforms not only her to a Reverend Mother, but her unborn daughter as well. Now Mommy Reverend Mother and Baby Reverend Mother give Willy advice on what to do and start creating a cult among the Freeman. Willy also needs to be accepted as a native, so he has to join the Freeman Boy Scouts and go camping, learn their desert dance, and surf the dunes on the back of a sandworm. Only then can he be called Muadi Boozle, which translates to Kangaroo Mouse Pillar Base. Now that Kangaroo Mouse Pillar Base is one of the Freeman, and that the majority at this point believe he's their prophesized savior, they start disrupting the spice collection of the Harkonnen family. Baron Von Gluttony doesn't like this turn of events, and tells Drax to step it up or he's out. Drax fucks it up like only Drax can, so the Baron has a tournament for his youngest nephew Elvis on Nazi World, and then makes him the new governor of Arrakis. Elvis goes immediately to the artillery, scorched earthing everything that even smells like Freeman. Meanwhile, Willy finds Thanos out in the desert smuggling spice and brings him into the Freeman fold, and after the Freeman are bombed back to the Stone Age by Elvis, they all head south of the border to enlist the Zealots to their cause. Willy decides he needs to drink the Kool-Aid as well to get clarity on some wicked dreams he's been having lately, and it doesn't go quite as well for him as it did Mama Reverend Mother. However, Mary Jane comes to the rescue by mixing in a bit of tear juice in with the Kool-Aid and brings Willy back from the brink of death. But reborn Willy is now Super Willy, able to leap tall sandworms in a single bound, as well as read people's thoughts and see the future. So Willy heads back north with his cult to wage war. The Emperor has heard that Willy is still alive and heads to Arrakis to intervene in all of these shenanigans and secure his family's power, but Willy has a plan. He blows up a mountain to let a large sandstorm come in to hide his sandworm invasion from one side, his buried assassin invasion from another, and his zealot army from a third. His three-pronged attack succeeds, and he makes his way to the throne room where he kills Baron Von Gluttony, who it turns out is his granddaddy. He then gives the Emperor a choice: step down and allow him to marry his daughter and assume the mantle of Emperor or die. The Emperor chooses death, so he has Elvis fight his battle for him. Elvis and Willy dance around a bit before Elvis stabs Willy in the gut, gets cocky, and then gets stabbed in the heart by his own blade. Ready to stab the Emperor in the heart, Empress Yelena says she will marry Willy if he spares her father's life. Willy insists the Emperor kiss the ring, which he does. The other families say, "Nah, we aren't into going to a wedding in the near future," and roll Willy taking his newfound Imperial army into war credits.
All right, 2024's Dune Part 2. So we reviewed Dune Part 1 back in 2021, whenever it released. And we both really liked that movie back whenever we watched it. What'd you think of this one? Well, it says the recording that we released that says that we liked it.
I don't remember doing that recording.
Of course you wouldn't.
It's been so long.
Right. Like, what'd you think about this one?
It was good. I was a little... It took me a minute to get going on it because, I forgot what exactly had happened at the end of the first one.
Right.
you know, so I was a little, I'm not going to say confused, but I was a little foggy on details at the beginning there. Because it looks like it picks up almost immediately from where the last one left off.
Yep.
Maybe a few days.
Yeah, it's not long, but you know, basically the last one picked, or the last one ended where he was fighting Jameis. He was challenged and had to fight Jameis. Ended up killing Jameis and kind of securing he and his mother's passage to wherever they were going. So, pardon me. We basically pick up pretty much shortly thereafter in this movie. And so, I didn't get the chance to actually rewatch Dune Part 1 before I watched this.
Yeah, I had thought about doing that and then I forgot. Actually, what happened is I had thought about doing that. And then I was rudely informed last Friday that it came that it well no I'm sorry I was rudely informed on Wednesday that it was going to come out on Friday.
No, I gave you more than 3 days notice.
No, I didn't. Yeah, I knew when it was coming out. I didn't realize the date. So when we were recording Madam Web is when it really hit me that, oh damn, okay.
Yeah.
So I didn't have time, needless to say, to watch Part 1.
Yeah.
So trying to remember those things, and then I've never read the books, right? So I am basically watching this thing with zero previous knowledge, right? Because even the old Dune, David Lynch Dune or whatever, it doesn't give you enough to know what's going to happen.
I mean, I don't know.
It gives you some, but it doesn't give you a lot.
The David Lynch Dune was fairly... it was fairly faithful to the books. In fact, I would say that in some cases, the David Lynch Dune was a little bit more faithful to the books than this one.
Okay.
Because, first of all, his sister was born in the first Dune book. She was actually 4 whenever he attacked Arrakeen.
So I will... And that was one of my... I'm not going to call it a quibble, but that was one of my questions that I was going to ask you today was, I thought a lot more time had passed between them getting accepted and Paul riding the worm to victory.
Yeah. So they compressed the timeline a lot in this series.
How much? I mean, how?
By like 4 years.
How long do you think this?
How long do you think we've
gone so far?
So she looked, Lady Jessica looked about, 8-9 months pregnant. If we figure that she got pregnant, she got pregnant by Leto right before Harkonnen came in and retook Arrakis.
Right.
Then, this is all of this took place within about 8 months of time.
Okay. All right.
Which in the book is much, much longer.
Right. Right.
Because she gives birth and let's see. Oh, what is his sister's name? Aaliyah. His sister's name is Aaliyah. She gives birth to Aaliyah. Aaliyah comes out with the full powers of a reverend mother, as well as the intellect and maturity of a reverend mother. But she kind of plays like she's a girl, a little girl sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
She's like 4 years old whenever the final battle of Arrakeen happens, because she goes around like stabbing people, like stabbing fallen Harkonnen troops, and gets this name of like Saint something or other of Knives later on in the series. So, and she's actually the one that, that kills Baron von Gluttony. So her grandfather.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that, I was confused about that. And I had to do a little bit of reading. I was confused at that. So in my head, I was thinking that Lady Jessica had a baby with Baron von whatever. I didn't realize it was the other way around, that like her, that she was the daughter from that and didn't realize it.
Yeah, yeah. She was.
So I didn't quite follow that.
Harkonnen's daughter.
The movie. Yeah. I didn't follow that during the movie. So I did a little bit of checking. But I mean, I will admit, for the most part, I followed this one better than I followed the first Dune from David Lynch. Not part one, but the David Lynch Dune. Like the steps or the sequence of events made a bit more sense.
Yeah. But I mean, Denis Villeneuve had two almost 3 hour movies to tell his tale here.
Right.
Whereas Lynch only had like what, 2.5 hours is what that movie came out as.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, he's got more real estate to play with, which helps. I felt, even with it being two movies, I felt like I was following this a little bit better.
No,
especially when it came to do with like the visions and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The visions in the Lynch one were really hard to figure out.
Yeah. I will give you that. And that's just because of, you know, the way that David Lynch filmed those scenes and kind of his vision for those scenes and the technology at the time whenever he did that. So,
right.
Yeah. So, I mean, David Lynch he's definitely got a look about his movies, and yeah, it's not to everybody's tastes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so even though it didn't stick, you know, with the book, they compressed the timeline here within a year was, you know, basically it's less than a quarter of the total timeline that actually happened in the books and even in Lynch's version.
Yeah, so I was thinking that the daughter, the unborn child, was like, because she took the Kool-Aid, basically froze her development and everything. It's so like Jessica was going to end up being like forever pregnant. That's the idea that was going through my head, because I was like, this is supposed to take a long time and she's still pregnant.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what threw me off.
Yeah.
On that. Cause no, I knew this was supposed to be a couple years at least,
They compress the timeline here. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, very much so.
Yeah. And that was a little bit confusing. And I don't know why they did that. I don't know if it was because they didn't want to try and cast a child for that, because the child would have had to have, you know, been able to act with a very, very mature nature. And I don't know that you could maybe pass a 6 or 7 year old for somebody that young, if you get somebody, you know, a child that's small enough. But even a 6 or 7 year old, I don't know if they could pull that off. It's the way that, you know, Denis Villeneuve probably wanted. So they just went kind of a different direction and just did it in utero instead of, you know, as a young child, which I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen, because all signs point to a sequel. He's going to do Dune Messiah next, which is the next book in the series.
Right. So yeah, he had three set up, right?
Yeah.
He had this as a trilogy.
Or he wants to do it as a trilogy, and it was going to depend upon how well part two did. Part two went before he did part three. Now, he's also said that he's not going to jump immediately into part three, that he's going to write the script or get the script written and make sure that it's, you know, up to par. So it'll probably be another, you know, 4 or 5 years before we see that.
Right, right. I mean, and I'm pretty sure it's going to do that. It's going to happen. They've already made $178.5 million at the box office.
Yeah, on a budget of $190.
Right, yeah. So, and we're recording this on day
opening
three.
Weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, day three of the box office. So, right. I mean, I see it happening. And I hope it does, because I'd like to see the full, I'd like to see the end. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, Dune Messiah isn't the end.
Well, there's I know it's not the end.
Four more books after that.
But it's the end that Denis wants, right? I mean, he's only wanting to do three.
Right.
So he's going to put it at a nice, quote unquote, conclusion, right? You know, he's gonna he probably won't leave it as a cliffhanger like he has these other two.
Right. Yeah. And this is definitely left it as a cliffhanger, but it kind of follows suit with the book, where he basically gains control of the empire. He is the new emperor. The old emperor has stepped down, proclaimed him the new emperor. He's about to join his house. Well, actually two houses, the House of Atreides and the House of Harkonnen, because he's now pretty much the leader of House Harkonnen at this point.
Because everybody else is dead.
Yeah. With, the Emperor's house.
And I guess technically he has a legitimate claim to it.
Yeah. Yeah. He was Baron von Gluttony's grandchild. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's basically about to unite three of the houses. So he's got some power behind him. So he's, spoiler alert, he's going to become the new emperor. Chani is still going to still be around.
You think?
No, she's in Dune Messiah too.
Maybe.
She's the emperor. So. And we discussed this whenever we talked about the first Dune and then the last Dune Part One. The way that the royal families work in this universe is they have a wife that's basically a political marriage, right?
Right.
And they have a consort, and it's a known consort. It's a mistress, and that's basically who they're there for love. That's their romantic relationship. And they can have children out of both or from both parties. And both those children have legitimate claims. It's just, one marriage is more political. The other is for romance.
But it doesn't seem like Chani is going for it.
She gets convinced.
You think?
Yeah. I've read the books.
Oh, so this whole I'm going to go be a desert flower thing is was in the books too, where she walked off.
I mean, that particular scene, I'm not sure. I don't remember the books that well or that detailed, but yeah, she's definitely not cool with it at first, but you know, she understands the political intrigue.
Okay. All right. I thought she would be like, I know how shit works, but I don't want to get involved with that shit. So good on you. Have fun.
Not quite. Yeah.
We'll see you when you die in Valhalla. I don't know.
What's odd about the books, and I've only read through the first books, but I've read synopsis of the last three books. What's odd about the books is Duncan, you know, his
Duncan
weapons.
Idaho?
Yeah, Duncan Idaho, his weapons trainer from like the first part.
Yeah.
He's basically the main character in all these books, or has a major role in all these books and becomes a main character in the later books.
So that ain't happening. Duncan's dead.
Well, you think he's dead.
No, we saw him get stabbed.
Yeah, but did we see him actually die?
Yes, that was Aquaman. Aquaman died, man.
I remember.
Yeah. He's dead.
We'll see. We'll see if he pops back up in Dune Messiah. I mean, he's going to have to. He's not like a minor character in that book.
Well, I mean, maybe they could give it to Thanos. Is Thanos still alive at this point?
Yeah, Thanos is still alive.
God damn, can't kill that purple fucker. Huh.
I mean, we didn't see him die at the end of this one.
No, we didn't. That's why I was wondering I'm saying in the books, is Thanos still alive? Did he survive and became a smuggler, or have they made Duncan's arc be Thanos's arc?
No. So the way Duncan actually comes back is a little convoluted or a little bit different. He does come back in Dune Messiah, and if they do it the way they did in the book in Dune Messiah, then it'll make sense whenever they bring him back, kind of.
All right. Oh.
I'm trying to remember if Gurney is in Dune Messiah.
I don't know.
I know he's not just in the Dune book, because he's referenced later. He comes back into the story later, but I can't remember if he comes back in Dune Messiah or if he comes back in Children of Dune.
He's in Children of Dune, according to Wikipedia, holder of all knowledge. Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
That's it.
So it wasn't in Dune Messiah?
Doesn't look like it, no.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
Now, all that has, all that's contingent on, you know, following all that stuff more closely.
Right.
You know. But, yeah. Do you think we'll see Anya Taylor-Joy in Messiah?
I mean,
you don't think it's going to jump far enough to where she can potentially be in it?
No, because Dune Messiah takes place like a little bit after Dune. It's how Paul basically comes into power and secures that power and like sets up basically his dynasty. So,
okay. I didn't know. I thought that was, I recognized her when she popped up. I was like, hey,
I mean, it takes place a little bit past Dune, but I don't think it's enough for Anya Taylor. Anya Taylor Joy to be as old as she was whenever we saw that vision of her.
Right. Yeah, but I saw that and I was like, hey, you know, I recognized her as the in the cameo. So I was like, oh, okay.
Now in Children of Dune, she would be about that old.
Okay.
Because she actually becomes the, basically the adoptive mother of his kids, because he dies at the end of Children of Dune or in the middle.
Okay. So his reign wasn't for very long.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So let's talk about Nazi world.
Nazi world. Yeah. I thought it was
the Harkonnen home planet.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting. So It made sense. It looked normal. And I thought maybe it was, I thought, okay, everybody's just kind of white, because you see Drax as being a very pale individual when he's on Arrakis, right?
Yeah.
And then you go there and everybody's pale, and it's like, oh, okay. And it's just, that's just how they are. But then, you know, they get out of the, you know, black sun, and Elvis is normal complexion. And I'm like,
he's still pale.
He's pale, but he's not near as pale as what Duncan or Drax is, right?
No, he's about as pale as Drax. So if you watch him and Drax in that one scene together where he basically shoves his face into the ground and makes him kiss his boot, they're about the same complexion.
Okay.
Now, you can really tell how pale he is outside of the black sun when he goes and puts his knife to the throat of the Bene Gesserit that's in there. And I can't remember her name, but basically one that he screws and she has the child, which
is really weird.
Yeah. If you look at his complexion compared to hers, hers is a pink complexion, and his is not anywhere near that pink. So now it's not the stark white complexion that you get in the filming of the outside scenes. And I thought that was a really interesting choice to have this black sun, and what would the light from a black sun look like? How would that illuminate your planet? And I guess it illuminates your planet through a bunch of ultraviolet.
Yeah, I guess.
So
yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of this weird black light effect. And you mentioned that they did some sort of kind of grayscale IR.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever looked at the video feed from a camera whenever you touch or whenever you press an IR?
Yeah. I've got a couple cameras that have IR recording for the house, and you know, everything goes black and white and grayscale and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, even just hitting like a remote control on a camera, you can actually see the flash because it's picking up that IR. But if you look at a low light camera that picks up some of that IR signal, you can see that people's eyes turn black, and you could see that effect whenever they did some of the close-ups in the fight scene, as well as his black teeth. That was weird. That kind of clued me into kind of how they were doing that. It was an interesting effect. I thought it was really cool. It definitely gave the Harkonnen planet a unique look and feel. And it felt like, you know, okay, so this is why these people are so fucking psychotic, is because they exist on this hellhole of a fucking planet. So
yeah. It had a very gladiatorial feel to it.
Very much had an ancient Roman kind of feel to their government. Yeah, kind of Rome meets fucking Nazi Germany. Yeah.
Yeah. So I liked it. I thought it was kind of interesting. You know, he's got some weird creepo concubines that like eat flesh or something.
I wasn't sure what the hell he was feeding. Because when that one dude got, you know, his throat slit just instantly for saying, you know,
they jumped back.
Yeah, they started dragging him away. Send him to my room because my whatevers haven't been able to eat since
they're hungry, the flight. Since the flight. Yeah.
Like, I was like, what the fuck did he fly with?
Yeah, I don't. Well, that and then I don't know what those guard dudes had. They were in some like gimp outfits or something out there in the stadium.
His guard. Yeah. Looked like something out of like American Horror Story.
Yeah, it was like, geez. But yeah, I thought that was a very cool aesthetic, even when like doing the fireworks and what have you, they were all like this black.
Yeah, they look
almost
like
underwater explosion
underwater explosions. Type. Yeah, that's exactly, I bet, how they filmed that.
Yeah. So that was kind of cool and interesting. It was a nice, I mean, it was weird as hell, but it was a nice stark contrast to everything else that we had seen, you know, all the warm tones and everything like that. It was kind of an interesting, quick palate cleanser, so to speak.
Yeah, because before, I mean, we'd seen already like, you know, like an hour and a half worth of just browns and
browns tans. And reds and
a little bit of red, but yeah, mostly just fucking browns and tans. That was basically the color palette that we'd been staring at for an hour and a half, and then we go to this like high contrast fucking black and white color palette, and you're just like, wow, this is totally different.
Yeah. It was interesting. So what is that? What is that shit that Fat Bastard goes into?
I have no idea. It looks like motor oil.
It does. But does it look like motor oil because of the planet? And it's actually just like, you know, a nice, you know, bubble bath?
I mean, maybe. But, you know, when he comes out of it, it's clinging to him and it still looks like motor oil. I don't know what it is. Probably some sort of nutrient bath that he has to sit in to, you know, stay alive, because he's hooked up to tubes and shit.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know what that is, but it's definitely gross.
Yeah, most definitely.
So I thought the music was good.
Music was good.
Hans Zimmer, you know, is the one that composed this one. He composed part one. He's already signed on for Dune Messiah 2. So, music is good. Hans Zimmer is, you know, one of the best. Nothing super remarkable about the music. But the parts where you do actually notice the music, it doesn't take away from the movie. So, and that's one of my big criteria about music, is it either enhances the movie or it takes away from the movie, or it just blends into the background and the, you know, if it blends into the background, fine. If it enhances the movie somewhat, even better, but it better not distract from the movie. So this one passes the music test.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I thought so.
Other than that, I mean, this is a terrific movie. Do you like this better or less than part one?
Oh, man. Honestly, I can't give a very solid opinion, because it's been a while since I saw the first one. I liked them both about the same.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say I liked them both about the same. I got the same sense of, I had the same feeling coming out of both of them, you know, in terms of, this was a good movie, and, you know, I could pay attention or follow along with what was going on, more so than I could with the original Dune. The original Dune, I got done with it. I'm going, what the hell, through part of it, you know, just because of just the filming style and what have you. I thought it was just as good. It didn't suck. So, which you're always concerned about when it comes to the second movie of a series.
I would actually say that this is probably one of those rare occasions where the second movie is better than the first. Now, I'm not saying it's hugely better or massively better than the first, but I do probably think this is actually a little bit better than the first.
Okay.
All right. So, I mean, it is. Yeah. So, got a haiku for us.
Superpower is going to go to...
No, we don't do superpowers on this show. Wrong show.
Haikus. Oh, yeah, okay.
Haiku. You got a haiku for us this week?
I do. This one is titled... Even More Sand. Worm Piss gives Mind Trip. Kangaroo Mouse has the nukes. Not enough cowbell.
Not enough cowbell.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there wasn't one cowbell in this entire movie.
Did it need cowbell?
Well, it had Christopher Walken. Of course it needed some cowbell.
What'd you think of Christopher Walken's Emperor?
I thought it was all right. If he was trying to play an emperor that seemed tired and just more or less done with this shit, it was good. He seemed like an emperor that was basically phoning it in and waiting for his daughter to take over.
I mean, that's kind of...
Yeah.
It's kind of how it was in the books, although in the books he was more of an emperor who was losing the grip on the empire. But yeah, he was definitely grooming his daughter for and using her as kind of a political piece in the books as well. So
yeah. I mean, I think he did a fine job. I mean, he didn't have much in it.
I love Christopher Walken. The only issue I have with Christopher Walken in movies is Christopher Walken being Christopher Walken, you know.
Yeah, he has the same talking cadence,
right,
regardless of what he plays.
But he did really well in this movie not talking like Christopher Walken, not speaking like Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
You caught it just a little bit when he was on the throne on Arrakeen.
Yes.
But that's the only part that I caught it at. So yes. I thought he did.
Yeah.
I thought he did really well in this movie, not being Christopher Walken. So
yeah, I noticed that too. I was like, oh,
there it is.
There it is. There's the cowbell. Because that's what I had in my head was, I have a need. A need for more cowbell. You know, that's what I was hearing. And you got that little pause in there. I'm like, oh, he's going to ask for it. And then he didn't. I was a little disappointed. Toying me with my emotions like that.
All right. You got any awards?
I am required to.
Yes, you are.
Yep.
Who's got your black lung?
I gave the black lung to Baron Fat Bastard.
Baron Fat Bastard, okay.
Yeah, he had that hookah pipe or whatever he was sucking on his mouth during the gladiator thing.
And then, tournament, yeah.
Yeah, and then right before he, tried to drown himself in motor oil.
Yeah. That's who's getting mine too, so.
All right.
Baron Honkonen gets the black lung. Who's got your head lush?
I gave it to Lady Jessica for deciding that she needed to drink some worm juice while pregnant. Very irresponsible of her as a mother to be enjoying the worm juice while pregnant.
All right. So I was torn on this.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I wanted to give it to Stilgar. To Stilgar for pouring one out for his homie. Actually pouring out his homie.
Pouring out his home. Oh, I got you into the sacred waters.
Yeah.
So. I didn't think about that. I didn't think about that one. That's nice.
I actually gave it to Paul for sucking on the Kool-Aid.
Okay. Yeah. See, I could have gone either way, but I figured Mama Atreides earned it a little bit more because she was pregnant.
Yeah. She did it while pregnant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Who's got your player?
I'm going to give it to Paul for not only convincing Zendaya to get with him, hey, drop Tom Holland, but then turn around and saying, never mind. I'm going for Florence. Pugh.
Yeah. So he's getting mine as well. So,
all right.
So he's basically, he tells, because he knows what he's about to do, because he pretexts it by going to Chani and saying, look, I love you. I'm going to love you for the rest of my life.
I will love you until I die.
He definitely doesn't tell her I'm about to propose marriage to this chick over here, though.
Yeah. She goes, I love you, but doesn't go, hey, look, baby, what I'm about to do means nothing.
She didn't mean anything to me.
She doesn't mean anything to me. Nothing at all. It's just a way to secure this thing.
Yeah. And then he, yeah. And then he proposes to Arulian. Arulian, yeah. So,
yeah.
Purple Hippo.
I give it to Paul and his visions.
Yeah. Paul got mine as well.
Wait, what? On your own show? That was a three-way,
dude. God damn it. God damn it.
French call that a menage a trois.
Fuck.
And not only that, but it was on a movie that had sand.
God damn it.
Which is gritty. It gets everywhere.
It's coarse, rough, and gets everywhere.
Look, I'm not even saying it
right. God damn it. If you're going to fuck up my show with your shit, you got to say it right.
I'm sorry. It even has sand. It's coarse, it's rough, and it gets everywhere. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. It's been a while. I was a little rusty. But, you know, I am honored that you would bring in the three-way and sand on the first comeback of your hosting capability.
You know, that's,
or hosting.
That's why I ended the show, right? You know?
Was because of sand and three-ways?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
I guess there's better ways to go out, or worse ways to go out than a three-way, I guess.
All right. This is the part of the show where we're going to pick what we're going to review next.
I want to do Ghostbusters.
You don't want to do Ghostbusters.
I do. I want to do Ghostbusters.
All right. Well, I already gave you your way twice so far in the show. I guess we'll do Ghostbusters next.
Hey, that's nice.
All right, so on the next show, we are going to be reviewing
When is the next show?
When is this? This releases March 22nd. We are planning...
Wait, this recorded releases March 22nd?
No. The movie that we'll be doing next releases March 22nd.
I have it on good authority and forever immortalized on the internet that this is supposed to be coming out on Friday.
Yes, this will release Friday, March 8th.
Okay.
So Ghostbusters releases Friday, March 22nd. So we will be doing, or this next show, the next episode, will release Friday, March 29th.
That is going to be fun.
It is.
Okay.
And I'm not even going to read the synopsis. We already spoiled it. It's Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Aww. I was hoping to do Ghostbusters 2.
Haven't we already done Ghostbusters 2?
I think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we have.
I'm pretty sure we have. I think we've done it all.
All right. Anything else before we head out?
No.
All right, well, that's the show. Our intro and outro music is Welcome Home by Cambo. Podcrawl music is Snack Mix by Machette. If you'd like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. You can leave us feedback on our Discord channel at smokinganddrinkinginspace.com/Discord, or you can email us at smokinganddrinkinginspace@outlook.com. If you'd like to throw a few nickels our way, you can become a Patreon supporter by going to smokinganddrinkinginspace.com/Patreon, and make sure to visit gunnageek.com for more great shows and other great shows like that. Yeah. For this week, I'm Jason.
More great shows and other great shows. We have all the shows on Gunna Geek. I'm not rusty at all. My name's Jason. Hurdy, hurdy, hur.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you next episode.
Bye.
All right, well, that's our show. Our intro and outro music is Welcome Home by Cambo. Podcrawl music is
See, it's not as easy as you think it is it? Giving me shit from last episode about not being able to speak good.
Yeah, but you do this more often now than I do.
Oh, you should be well rested, and you should have done your vocal gymnastics before the show.
Fuck off. Red leather, yellow leather, yeah.
Red, yellow, red, you yellow, can't even yellow, say yellow.